Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 25th of May, recording at 9:13 p.m., and that's British summertime. And what a beautiful summer day it's been again today. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick review of the week. For stock markets, which had taken such a battering in previous weeks, we have seen a little bit of a loss of downward momentum. Well, no, we've seen more than that. We've seen a loss of downward momentum for most stock markets overall, and just a few upward dynamics. Now, that includes today. The Asian stock markets are mostly a little bit steadier. So are the European markets. Wall Street and Canada bucked the trend, Canada all virtually unchanged. Wall Street just small declines, down 0.25% by the S&P and less for the NASDAQ. Long-dated government prices, they've been easing in Japan recently, and they have also eased a little bit in most other markets. So the yields, with the exception of those bunds, have in many instances lost some downward momentum. We have not seen a further advance in the Spanish and Italian yields. They've actually eased back a little bit, but are still uncomfortably high. In precious metals, we've seen a loss of downside momentum also, and not quite upward dynamics, but at least getting some two-way activity following a bit of an accelerated decline overall. Most commodities remain generally soft, though, and the CCI, the Continuous Commodity Index, had another week to the downside, although it's just edged higher in the last 2 days, but that hasn't begun to retrace the gains that we saw during the first 3 days. And what else to mention? Crude oil, similarly, a bit weaker overall, 106 and a bit for Brent, and $90.75 for WTI as I speak. US dollar has been firm and the euro has been weak. The yen has been firm as as well, excuse me. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, it's been such a nervous time up until this little bit of steadying here for global stock markets, and this has really reflected concerns, as you know, over the European problems and the Greek impasse here in terms of being able to form a government, and the uncertainty over the next election has added to concerns, the contagion fears. Well, it's an old story, isn't it? You know all about it. I don't need to detail it all. And an increasing concern that is taking hold among institutional investors, and particularly within the financial community, is what's known as the asset liability matching among banks, and that's ALM for short, asset liability matching. In other words, there's very big concern within the banks in terms of what their actual vulnerability is with individual countries in terms of their actual exposure. And you know, the way it's playing out, for instance, if a bank has loans to Spanish borrowers, it's trying to cover those with funding from Spain rather than from Germany, because they don't want to pull money out of Germany. It's that type of situation which has led to some counter, I beg your pardon, which has led to some capital flight, which we've also seen increasingly in the news recently, and not just from Greece. Now that's very, very serious because the implications of that really are that we could see much more deleveraging than has already occurred or that actually needs to occur. Now, I don't want to over-dramatize that risk because I think there's plenty enough hysteria over the European project as it is. But what I feel is if these people sleepwalk and don't act, I'm talking really about the governments in these various European countries, because the Eurozone is like a rudderless ship at the moment. There's a lot of squabbling and bickering. They're behind the curve of events. And I don't think that's really, I don't think this is a hopeless situation at all. My own view, just to declare my hand on this, is that, as veteran subscribers may recall, right from the beginning of the whole Euro project discussion, I personally did, as a UK citizen, did not want to see the UK join the single currency. I could see well why the European countries wish to do that, and which is obviously their choice. And so I was relieved to see the UK stay out of the euro, although it was a close thing. The Financial Times, no less, and The Economist were lobbying strongly in favor of joining the euro. But the UK did not. Fortunately, I feel, but the other countries, the countries on the continent, chose to do, or many of them chose to do so. Now, to pull out at this stage with all those accumulated debts, I mean, I think that would be a tragedy, really, and I feel that they would be much better off to see this thing through by pushing as quickly as possible for a full fiscal union. And I know people say, oh, well, you need to have this ratified and that ratified, and all these different separate governments need to agree to this. It's a complicated, lengthy process. Well, that's you change the system if that's the way. If most people wish to stay in the euro, and the Greeks have certainly indicated that they do, and never mind that I won't question the motive. I think that most Europeans, generally in my experience, want to stay within the euro, but they're going to have to do that. They're going to and to pull this off. They're going to have to push much more quickly towards fiscal union. I've said this before. Many others have said it as well. And they can do that if they have the political will, and I think they do, and I hope they do. That's what they need to do. But there's little doubt that concerns such as not just Greek default, but this asset liability matching that I've mentioned. Gillian Tett of the Financial Times produced a good article on it, and I'm leading with that today. That's all these factors are what's behind roiling these markets so much at a time when global GDP growth had slowed generally due to higher oil prices earlier in the year. Now, let's see where we go from that. My hunch is that Greece will, and it's anybody's guess. Your guess is certainly as good as mine on this, because we've not been in this situation before. So these are political decisions. But my guess is that since over 80% of Greeks say that they wish to stay in the euro, that somehow Europe will cobble together some sort of deal which enables the Greek left, which has been opposing the austerity program to save a little bit of face, have some sort of softening deal, but can at least stick enough with the austerity to qualify for the next loans to be forthcoming. I've already mentioned the requirement to push for the fiscal union. The ECB is almost certainly going to be compelled to buy more sovereign debt. And the LTRO program is bound to be extended, lending more money to European banks. They're going to have to print a whole lot more. And yes, of course, that will mean a weaker euro, but that'll be part of the recovery process overall. And the Bundesbank may carp about all this, maintaining what they see as the moral high ground. But Germany, as some have pointed out, has done extremely well with this soft currency overall. Well, I don't want to go on and on this because you're reading about it here every day. But let's bring it back to the stock markets here. We're oversold. We've seen some accelerations to the downside. Now we've seen losses of downside momentum. So far, the action resembles steadying rather than any kind of upward dynamics. If I want to be rude about it, it's in the dead cat bounce category. But the more important thing is the prior downward acceleration. So I don't think it would take too much to trigger quite a decent rally. But if we don't see some encouraging signs out of Europe or out of China, out of the United States, wherever, if we don't see that, then the mood is sufficiently nervous in here overall that we could get some further drift to the downside. But my best guess, and I wouldn't stake my life on this, but my best guess is that we're probably in the beginning of a support building phase. Now, Owen and I said the same thing last August and September, and fortunately that turned out to be true, but there was so much choppy volatility, and with some markets drifting a little bit further. When I say the beginning of the bottoming out support building process, that doesn't mean that all the lows are in, but it does mean that we've seen most of the downside. So then we get some of the choppy support building phase overall. So my guess is that's where we are today. Not all that different from what we saw in August and September of last year. Hopefully it will be less volatile, and it has been so far, so there's a good chance that it will be less volatile overall. Valuations are attractive. The companies that we like, though, certainly for this economic environment at this stage, is the dividend aristocrat type companies, and autonomies which are in that category, or at least have very, very decent dividends overall. I think, to use the vulgarism, that's a no-brainer when you have no real payout from savings banks, no real return on deposits, and where long-dated government bond yields are so low. So the defensive qualities of those high-yielding dividend aristocrats will ensure that they remain superior performers overall. And in a stock market recovery, if we are in a support-building phase here right now, they could do really quite well overall. Now, what about the long-dated government bond prices? Well, I think that there are plenty of reasons why yields can stay low. The deflation fears related to the slow growth that we've seen, that is certainly a factor. The quantitative easing that we have actually seen, the levels of fear, which of course are a contrary indicator, but that we have also seen. But in terms of safe havens, that could investors could come back, or could and will at some stage become badly unstuck in those markets. So thus, I would just have a much greater preference, say, for the dividend aristocrat type stocks. And yes, they'll be a little bit more volatile, but you pick them up when they are, and you pick them up on down days. Now, what about gold? Also, some, and the other precious metals, also some downward acceleration. Also, a little bit of steadying in the last week and more, with gold and silver down near their lows that they had seen in September and December of last year. Now, again, to use the vulgarism, this on weekly charts doesn't look like anything more than a dead cat bounce. It looks a little bit better, perhaps, on the daily charts. What is interesting to me is that during the whole buildup of the Greek crisis in 2011, that gold and silver were behaving in no uncertain terms as safe haven investments. They were powering ahead, they were accelerating ahead, and then got in, overextended and in trouble as a consequence of that, as inevitably happens with markets that accelerate strongly. Now, ever since those accelerated peaks that we saw last year, April for silver, August and September for gold, ever since those peaks, those two precious metals have been behaving like risk assets. But I don't think that's going to remain the case in perpetuity, and I think down at these levels, there's a reasonable case for them reverting or regaining some of their safe haven status before too long. So I think they're interesting at this level. There is still a risk that we get another hit to the downside. You can't rule that out until we have seen a more vigorous recovery. And to say all we've really seen is this loss of downside momentum, a little bit of steadying, possibly some small upward, well, some of the upside days could qualify as small upward dynamics, but it hasn't been decisive. And really, the frustrating thing about a move like that is you're always dealing in percentages in terms of trying to guess what's actually going to happen. You don't get confirmation, of course, until after the event. When gold is back above 1750, everybody will know that was a hugely important low down here this in the month of May. I see enough action there to want to have a little exposure, and I have gold. I rolled that position forward into the August contract, or it was on automatic rollover, but I fully intended to roll it forward, as I mentioned in comment of the day. I have a little bit of silver. I picked that up again today, and I also have some platinum, which I picked up earlier in the week. Platinum is selling at one of its biggest discounts to gold in history. Over 70% of the platinum produced is comes from South Africa. They've got infrastructure problems in South Africa. Supply demand is pretty much in balance. I heard from a colleague that actually people in India were buying platinum rather than gold recently because it was cheaper. And on all historic comparisons, it's better value given given the discount. I mean, just if I read it off the screen right now, gold is currently trading at just below $1,573. Platinum's trading at $1,432. So again, as I say, one of the biggest discounts to bullion in history. Usually, historically, platinum sells at a trades at a small premium to gold. So I think these are interesting in here. They're a little bit tricky on the from the trading standpoint for levered anybody using leverage. In terms of ETFs, I think these are attractive levels. And one need not panic if gold did go down another $100. I'm not forecasting that, but I would say that's probably the risk. And the fact that a number of other people are saying that probably reduces that risk somewhat. But I think there's a whole lot more on the upside. That's the really important point. In terms of currencies, the dollar's been rock steady overall. That has held the precious metals in check, or kept them on the defensive in terms of US dollar prices. So some of these metals will have done differently in some of the currencies that some of the listeners to this audio will be holding. You can check those, can check out, of course, gold in whatever currency you're interested in the chart library. I was talking about the dollar and that steady US dollar overall. I think the next test for the dollar will occur when we get a decent rally, and I certainly expect a decent stock market rally before year end, and well before year end, and it'll be interesting to see how much of that safe haven buying actually switches out once again. I think it would be healthy if we did see at least a partial shift out, but not so much that it puts the dollar into a tailspin. And I don't think it will. I think probably we're going to see mostly ranging on a fairly quiet basis for the currencies more often than not. I've said that on a number of occasions, as you know. However, to pick out some of the exceptions in here, I do think the euro needs to go somewhat lower. And it's currently at 125 against the US dollar. And I think it will go lower overall. There'll be massive monetary printing by the ECB. The yen, I think, is still much too strong, and that's blocking a stock market recovery in Japan, or what it did is it forced a complete retracement of the rally that Japan saw from October of last year, well into March of this year. And I think that's because of that same battle. Shirakawa at the Bank of Japan resisting efforts from the exporters and the Diet. In Japan's ruling government to weaken the yen. And what he's doing is looking after the elderly Japanese savers, and that's commendable, but the cost is heavy in terms of export earnings for Japan's beleaguered exporters, and it causes more of them to move production outside of the country, which doesn't do the country a whole lot of good. So I think that's an adjustment that will occur eventually, whether or not we have to wait until next April or just before next April when Chirikawa's term expires, and he will certainly not be reappointed, or it happens sooner as Japan pushes a little bit more aggressively to put deflation behind it. We'll see. Now, crude oil. I was asked by several people about crude oil here today, and my feeling, and really with a view towards buying it, my thought is no, and partly because I think that there are a number of factors here. One, it was speculative demand for crude oil, And also hedging, and part of that being hedging demand against the possibility of an Israeli attack on the Iranian nuclear installations. And that became a political problem. We had jawboning by the Obama administration and other governments to get the price back down, and efforts to limit the amount of non-trade activity that could occur. In other words, trade activities, consumers and producers of crude, and they have legitimate hedging businesses. But these markets, as I've said before, were never meant to be asset classes. Commodity markets were never meant to be asset classes. So I feel in terms of supply and demand, that oil prices could easily go a little bit lower. That doesn't mean that some supply disruption wouldn't lead to firmer prices. It would. Or their political concerns could also push it up. But I don't think we get real tightness in terms of supply, barring those two factors. Obviously, if there was an attack on Iran, that would certainly cause a short-term spike. But barring those developments, I don't think we'll see a tight supply situation until we get a significant economic recovery. Now, in the meantime, all those subsidized renewables that are coming on stream, and more importantly, the development of shale gas and oil, and this is all increasing supply, and that's very much the future. That's what I've talked about on so many occasions, that in saying that we were in the second difficult decade in terms of tightness in energy supplies, but that by the next decade, and I think I would say 8 years from now, possibly sooner, because I've been saying this for a couple of years, that we should see energy prices lower than they are today. Certainly in real terms, that's inflation adjusted, of course. So, no, I wouldn't be buying the crude oil. I think if you want a commodity, I'd go for a precious metal here right now. That's my view. And don't want to let this get too long. I think I've covered the important bases. I hope I have, in terms of what you're interested in. Meanwhile, have a terrific weekend. All the best.